League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Nice. Broken iPad.
Please tell me I was recording. Hello, welcome to episode 10 of the Tottenham Way podcast with Dan Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Tom Hayward. Hello, and this week we are joined again by Harry Sherlock from Goal.com. Harry, how's it going?
Good, really good.
Thanks for coming back. You're pretty soon after the last time you were on. I think it was Everton, wasn't it?
Yes.
That we previewed last time that you were on.
Badly.
Yes, very badly. That's kind of usual for us, isn't it?
Yeah, we don't do previews.
A couple of apologies this week. First off, for it being a day late, that was my fault. I didn't have a voice at all yesterday, so I wasn't able to host it. It may well go in the middle of this as well. Secondly, the room where we usually record, you may remember a couple of podcasts ago, I think it was episode 8, we had an Eastern European flautist in there who we had to turf out. And records before we could record. She's in there again and she's not moving this time, so we're in the pub's kitchen, which is on the ground, the floor below where we usually record.
Oh, the sort of second kitchen, the hot, unused.
Yeah, we're not even in the good kitchen.
That'll be alright.
Yeah. But there is an ice machine in here which is whirring away in the background. I don't think it's too noticeable, but it may well start chugging halfway through. You may notice it, you may not. We're not. Not apologising for an ice machine, I'm afraid, no. Harry, like we said last time, it was just before Everton,
yep.
So we're in a very different place to where we were then. We hadn't won still, but performances were starting to pick up a little bit, I think.
Hmm.
You joined us at a very different time in the. This season, it seems like we're evolving very, very quickly. We might as well start with the North London Derby. We'll go in chronological order. Coming up to a week ago, it still seems to be splitting people, doesn't it? Dan, what did you think of? What do you make of? Because the obvious talking point is the changes that Pochettino made, in particular Fazio and Lloris. Fazio and Vorm coming in for Lloris and Alvarado, Vertonghen, depending on how you look at it. What did you make of it? How do you feel about it?
Well, we'll come on to City, and there's an argument that the City result has kind of vindicated his selection. But as soon as I saw the lineup, I thought it was a mistake to play Fazio and Vorm. And I can sort of understand why Vorm played, because it does make good sense to have a backup goalie who's kind of motivated and sharp and is ready to play. As Chelsea found this season, you can lose the number one at any point, and it makes sense to have a number two who's in good nick. But the Fazio call, it made no sense for me at all. He was about to leave the club in late August
at
West Brom. He's obviously got no future. He obviously wasn't match fit because he hasn't played at all, a couple of times in pre-season, but not much even then. And it just felt like an unnecessary gamble an unnecessary call given that it's Arsenal. I thought we shouldn't have made it. I mean, I think it cost us. Basically, Vorm and Fazio made the mistakes for their goals.
Yeah.
And I don't think that if we'd have played Vertonghen or Alderweireld, I don't think they'd have struggled on Saturday. So I think he got it wrong.
Aaron, what did you think?
I think I can understand the Vorm selection more than the Fazio selection. I have a sneaking suspicion, not based on inside information, that Vorm's appearance was probably contractually based in terms of the fact that he was probably told you will play in certain cup games, but you aren't undisputed number two to Hugo Lloris. Fazio, I just didn't get it. I think you and I, Dan, we spoke on the night about Fazio being in the team. And I didn't understand it. Arsenal have pace. They're a quick side. We tried to press them high, and Fazio is never going to work in that system. So he made the mistake that led to Flamini's second goal, just booting it in the air.
Went with the wrong foot, didn't he?
Yeah, Cardinal.
It was a tired sort of prod, yeah.
It was
it?
I haven't played in 6 months.
Yeah, I'm not match fit.
I think even
at all
from
kind of prod.
Just even in the first half, his passing, just his distribution was appalling. It was like the worst of Dawson. And you know, I love Dawson. I'm not saying that to be sort of unduly patronising or disparaging of Dawson. It's just everything he did was off the floor.
Yeah.
Everything he did was slow and laboured. It was a percentage sort of play that we did have a lot of with someone like Dawson, but without the likability factor that Dawson brought or the leadership. He seemed like a traffic cone at the back at the time.
I think with Fazio, and I saw a tweet that did the rounds on the night about the fact that if Spurs played in a low block and we had Fazio in that defence, he'd be really good, because he's not a mobile defender, but he's strong, he's willing to put his body on the line. But we're a mobile team, and we need a mobile defence. It's why Alderweireld and Vertonghen work so well together, because they're both quite quick, they're both good technically, and Fazio just isn't. And he's probably fifth, sixth choice. So it was a baffling decision for me to start him, because it was always going to end in disaster.
Yeah, and
it's particularly frustrating, because as a young player in the under-21s, who I really like, Velkovic, and apparently he's not particularly fancied by Pop, but one of the other reasons he might not be playing is he hasn't signed a new deal, and the club don't want to give game time to someone who's got no future, which does make sense. But
so the same for Fazio, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
like,
a fair point.
Completely fair.
I mean,
point.
On the
like,
flip
Fazio
side,
is just as likely as Velkovic to be sold in January or in the summer, and it's like, why aren't we giving this young centre back who just won the Under 20 World Cup a go, instead of a guy who we were actively trying to sell to West Brom a few weeks ago?
Do you feel like, to both of you, do you feel like it's a shame as well? Because I thought Wimmer was really good. I thought he was very similar to Vertonghen, and he seemed perfectly happy to receive the ball deep, and we were talking about before the pod, just kind of beat a man, even if it's just trying to, he's not got pace necessarily, but
he seems to work pace really well, and he looks really strong.
I think
he looks like a promising or a decent backup and a pretty promising centre half.
I think you're, as a centre back, you're always going to struggle when Fazio's your partner. I think that's just the way it is, you know. And he tried his best. I thought he put in a good performance. He wasn't at fault for either of the goals. So in that regard, he played well, and he was good. Because I was at the game, I covered it against Karabakh. He was good there as well. He's got
with Wimmer.
He
seems like it's going to take him a little while, I think.
He's got good distribution of the ball as well.
We're all sort of in agreement that Fazio was the wrong choice. But I'm not quite sure how to frame this question, but a lot of people were saying on Twitter, I saw, and elsewhere online, that Pochettino really got it wrong because it was Arsenal, and he doesn't understand what it means to the fans, and he doesn't understand how we feel about the game. What did you guys feel about those comments?
For me, but this is a guy that's played in like the most brutal derby in South America, which has a host of brutal derbies, isn't it?
Newell's Old Boys.
He said that his bus got smashed up. There was an interview with him before the Arsenal game last season, and he was talking about it. So I don't think he's not disregarding it. I just think, like you say, with Vorm, it could be an entirely contractual decision.
Yeah.
And with Fazio, I think Alderweireld had played every single minute thus far, and Vertonghen is our senior defender and the most likely to be lifted out for Wimmer to be given the minutes that he clearly needs. So I think I don't think he doesn't understand it. I just think that, you know, Redknapp did it. Redknapp did it to a worse degree as well. He played a midfield of Sandro on his debut, Livermore, and I think it was Cranchar, but I might be wrong. You know, it's been done before. Yeah. And Wenger made 10 changes to the game as well.
The thing is, when you win the game, your team becomes academic.
Exactly.
And, you know, no one's going to question it.
I think as well, going into the game, if someone had come up to me, you know, with a magic wand and said, right, okay, you can have a win and a narrow loss from those two games, I think most of us would have said, beat Arsenal, narrow loss to Manchester City.
Yeah.
I think we all would have taken that. And obviously it's the other way around.
Arsenal.
Yeah, I'd have taken going 1-0 and beating Arsenal 4-1.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we did that to City, and I think on the night I wasn't too disheartened by it because I thought we played well.
Yeah, I did.
I thought, you know, that's a point to make. I thought we dominated the game for long periods.
Yeah.
Clinton and G's cameo was remarkable in so many ways. I'm still haunted by his attempted volley that nearly went out for a corner.
Yeah.
Redemption, though.
Yeah,
redemption. I honestly think that redemption is a good word for the week that we've had, because I think after so much was levelled at Poch after the Arsenal game, and it was easy to ignore the fact that we did play reasonably well against what is a good side. 10 changes or not, they still had a very strong. You'd back that team to beat quite a few in the Premier League, to be honest. And I think they brought Alexis Sanchez on late as well, which
I think
changed the game quite a lot, because immediately Trippier looked 10 times more nervous than he had done for the previous, you know, 60 minutes or whatever. But everyone played fairly well, and then it was a similar team that went out against City. I mean, Kane started, probably not defence, but from midfield on was Dyer played. In both games, didn't he? Kane played in both games. Eriksen played in both games.
Did Kane start against Arsenal?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
I might be. I'm probably over-egging it a little bit, but it feels like it was certainly a lot of similarities in the two lineups, I thought. And everyone seemed to step up for the City game, and it didn't look like that for quite a long time, really. And you think, you know, Davis came back in for Rose. I thought Davis was going to have a nightmare against Sterling and, well, who else was he up against? Sanya on that right-hand side. I thought Davis was going to have a nightmare, and I thought Rose played really well in midweek against Arsenal. But I think Poch definitely kind of... I certainly don't think he sacrificed the North London derby purely for 3 points against City, but I think he's at least shown that he's able to get a squad completely behind what he wants to do. And we did redeem ourselves, I think, against City.
Well, I think that's the difference between this season and last season. This season, Poch couldn't really... He didn't have two teams. He couldn't really rotate the side. Well, and when he did rotate the side, he probably didn't do it with a great deal of confidence. He only did it when he had to do it. Like, if you remember the sort of the Fiorentina team for the second leg before the Chelsea game, it was a kind of mish... There were some players who he obviously felt he couldn't drop, like Kane, who I think started the game. But it was a kind of mishmash. It wasn't really a weak team, it wasn't really a strong team. Whereas this year, I think he's got more confidence in guys like Carroll and Wimmer, Njai, Townsend.
Yeah.
They're players who... They're his players. They've either been signed on his watch, or all their guys like Townsend, who he has trusted to be a starter.
That's the ice machine, by the way, if you can hear it.
But yeah, let's go on to City.
Yeah, I think so. We can pick apart the Arsenal game, but I think we're all in agreement that two selections in that first 11 probably cost us.
Yes.
One certainly. You know, no one likes to lose to Arsenal, but it's not the first time that it's happened, and it won't be the last time that it happens, particularly in a cup competition. You know, it's just if these things happen. But City was remarkable. In its difference. So, what, Harry? What did you cover it? Did you go? Did you?
I, funnily enough, I went out for lunch with my girlfriend, had no phone signal at the pub, and my mum is the type of person who, even if I'm at White Hart Lane, she texts me score updates from the game.
Legend.
And I rang her afterwards and I said, what was the score? And she said, oh, 4-1. I said, oh, probably an Aguero hat-trick then. And she explained, and I've watched the full game twice since, and the highlights about 9 times. I'll keep watching them, they're never being deleted from my Skybox. It was remarkable.
Yeah.
Absolutely remarkable. In that second half, we looked like we could beat anyone.
Yeah.
You know, if you put anyone in front of us, yeah, we'll have a go.
Do you feel like it was entirely unexpected?
Yes.
Dan?
I didn't expect it, but with glorious hindsight, with hindsight, I think since the Everton game, since about the time you last came on the pod, Harry, I remember feeling overwhelmingly positive after the Everton game, and it was a 0-0 draw, and you were like, how much were you drinking the day? And I just thought there were signs that it was kind of coming together.
We were due to smash someone.
Yeah, like, I mean,
just it was never.
It was never meant to be City.
No,
I only say it's unexpected because I remember being full of hope when we went to the Etihad and got beat 6-0.
Yeah,
you know, we've had those performances where we just crumbled in front of City, and that makes it all the more remarkable that we fell behind and then came back. And that was a goal as well that was, I can't really talk because of the other offside goals, but it's one of those that really could knock the stuffing out of a team. Yeah. You're attacking, you're on top, they break, it's offside, they score, you're 1-0 down.
Yeah.
Especially to score at the time we did, not to sound like Andy Townsend on a podcast, but Clive, it's a great time to score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they had to completely reshuffle their plans. We came out and just attacked them with absolute abandon.
Yeah.
And I thought everyone, to a man, I thought we were superb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the average age, and I'm probably going to get it completely wrong, but the average age was 23 years, and I believe it was something like 26 days of our entire team that was out. And that record that was beaten was our team versus Palace the week before.
Well, our front five young team was Kane, 21.
Yeah.
Son, 23. Yeah. Ericsson, 23.
Lamella
22. Dyer.
It's easy to forget that Lamella's so young.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Or
well,
front
is.
Six, rather. Dyer 21, Ali 19.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no one in that. Well, front six is over 24.
No.
Or over 23, rather. Which is.
Remarkable.
Pretty unprecedented in the Premier League, I would have thought.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Premier League era, I would have thought. There can't be many teams.
Well, so we beat our own record. The oldest people in that team would be
Vertonghen
and Lloris, who are 27 and 28.
I mean,
or
like everyone in that team. Yeah. I mean, I know Harry, you're like 14 or whatever, but everyone in that team, apart from Lloris and Vertonghen, was younger than me.
Yeah.
And everyone was younger than you.
I'm not actually
Lloris
14, if you're
saying. Yeah.
Just point that out.
It's incredible, and I think. The only thing that might hold us back is that beyond those youngsters, the depth that we've got isn't huge in certain areas. But, you know, at the moment, you just don't know what we could do. Or certainly on an individual level, every single player in that team on Saturday, the sky's the limit.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those that were younger than, say, 23 years old, they could end up at Champions League clubs.
Yeah.
It probably isn't going to be us, but if they realise their potential, and that is the exact same thing that we had 4 or 5 years ago, just before our best league team that we've ever had.
I think the team, that's a good
Sorry,
point.
Premiership team. Before
it's a good point to make, but I am far more enthused by this team now than I have been of any Spurs team in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Because we have players, like you say, I think he didn't play, but I think Bentaleb can be world class.
I forgot about Bentaleb.
Yeah.
I think he can be world class.
Yeah.
I think Dele Alli is a star already.
Yeah.
That kid is just, he's got magic in his boots.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
We'll have to manage him really well, won't we?
Yeah, but I think he could be Real Madrid, Barcelona level.
How did we get him?
Don't
I mean,
know.
Don't know, it's a rhetorical question,
but
it's just.
I can answer it, kind of.
Here we go.
I read. If you haven't read it, I tweeted an excerpt from it. We spoke about it last time.
Oh, I saw that tweet.
Guy living on the volcano. He was wanted by Newcastle.
Christ.
Why would he go there?
Yeah.
And Liverpool wanted him but never made a bid. Remarkably.
Get your own scouts.
And he went to Newcastle, saw the facilities and the fact that Steve McLaren was crying in the corner. came down to Tottenham and saw these world-class training facilities.
So he saw the state of Newcastle and then we signed him.
Saw these world-class training facilities, and because our training facilities are up there with the best in Europe.
Aren't we only second to City now?
Yeah.
Certainly in the country.
Yeah. And he saw that, and apparently he went back to Carl Robinson at MK Dons and he said, that's where I want to go.
I think Carl Robinson was quite handy as well for us. I think
Definitely.
He said to him, you know, stay local. He's from MK, isn't he? He's from Milton Keynes.
Is anyone from MK?
But
they only built it like 5 years ago.
Well, he's
only six.
Well, let's.
But back to the City.
Yeah, the City game. Go on.
Well, what I was just going to say, just in terms of the guys who. I mean, as we said, to a man, everyone was quality, but just. If you could have picked sort of scorers and assisters and people to get confidence boosting goals and assists, it was those guys. Like,
yeah.
You couldn't write it. Like, Kane needed the goal, he got his goal. Like, Lamella has been playing
the best
pretty well.
Open goal finish ever as well.
Oh, what
it.
A finish.
I
yeah.
sit in Park Lane and the gap that it went through was pretty much my eye line, and it looked like it travelled about 80 yards. It just, you could see all the way through it. And do you remember that old Brazil advert when they were running through the airport?
Were you talking about Dyer's?
Dyer's goal, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember the old advert? It was a Nike advert where the Brazil players are running around the airport
kicking balls
through hoops and stuff. It looked like that. It just looked like it had been orchestrated perfectly for him, this line. What a hit. Couldn't give a fuck if it was offside. Do not care. And Walker was about 3 yards
offside.
Oh,
and the liner
was ludicrous.
Banging liner as well.
Ludicrous.
I don't want to talk about it was kind of a shame because there was so much focus on that after the game. And it was like, our performance deserved so much more.
I think you're right, though.
You're
absolutely right. It was a perfect combination of players who were involved in every single goal.
Yeah, so Dyer's been doing so well in midfield, and it's like, that goal's going to give him so much more confidence to keep doing what he's doing. Lamella needed that goal because he's been playing so well, and you always feel with Lamella that it's also confidence based. I mean, he never seems to lose belief, but when he has played well, sort of feeds into the next performance. Kane needed a goal, and then it was nice for Toby to get off the mark.
Yeah, just Lamella was an assist for that.
Clinton got an assist as well. Amazing assist.
What a ball that was. That is,
it's a great goal as well. I think that gets
touch and turn.
It gets kind of overlooked because it was just Lamella, Demichelis and Caballero, but he had to take his time and he had to pick his spot and he didn't rush it.
Two months ago, he'd have missed that.
He would, definitely. Demichelis would have blocked it, or Caballero would have saved it.
Yeah.
It was a really confident finish, and it was like he knew he was playing well.
Mm.
And I think, as well, I really liked Eric Dyer's post-match interview with Spurs TV, when he was saying, I hear people saying stuff about Tottenham and I don't like it. And I love that.
Come on, Eric!
I love Eric.
He's so good.
I think that runs through the team because we're so young.
Yeah.
And it does remind me, not to draw the comparison, but it does remind me of the class of 92 in the fact that they played their first game, they got smashed by Blackburn, and everyone was saying, can't believe them, the kids, you know, the famous refrain. And they were like, well, we'll shut you up. And I get that impression that is what is running through this Tottenham team.
This
desire to prove people wrong. And it's a brilliant motivator.
Mm. I think we discussed this before in the pod as well. We were saying about that interview with Dyer. And it's nice. Every bit of it is amazing. But it's nice that he doesn't just say, we don't like what people are saying about us. Mm. It's Tottenham.
Yeah.
Don't like what people are saying about Tottenham. You know, at the end of the day, if we're saying that these could all be Champions League players, and therefore it's unlikely that they're going to be Champions League players with us. We don't know, but it's unlikely. But when you think of like someone like Dyer just saying we don't like what they're saying about Tottenham, it's specific, isn't it? And they know that we as a club and Pochettino as a manager has given them as young players a chance to go out and perform on the, you know, the biggest stage they're ever going to have played on so far, you know. And it's just great to hear that sort of thing, and it's nice to have a little insight into their mindset as a group, because you don't get a lot out of Tottenham really. So it's nice where the one thing that we have heard in the last couple of weeks is that Eric Dyer doesn't like what people were saying about him. You know, and they're out to prove a point, and they certainly did it against City. And I think people like Lamela more than anyone else in terms of proving a point. He did it, didn't he? And he's got one to prove, because 2 weeks ago, well, we've talked about it in a couple of pods. I think even one podcast is called Losing Lamela. I think we were, that's when we were resigned to it. Matter of a couple of days or a couple of weeks afterwards, we hear that Marseille were coming in for him on loan. And it only, we don't know why it didn't happen, but there looked like there was appetite from all sides for that to happen, Poch, and it just didn't.
Right?
Did Pochettino block it himself?
Yeah. That's what
so,
I heard.
So, therefore, are we seeing the fruits of that? Are we seeing the reasons why he blocked it now? Or was he, did he just, he wanted to dig in and he wanted to get Lamela to play into a certain level, and are we seeing that now?
I think his press conference, I can't remember the exact date, but I think his press conference was quite telling when he said, this is the season that
he
has to
make
form.
Or break, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that, to say that to a player, that goes either way. You know, either the player falls by the wayside and ends up in the reserves and just plays 5 games a season, or he becomes brilliant. And I really hope that Lamela delivers, because he can be so good.
I mean,
he really can.
He ran the show second half.
He did.
He was absolutely brilliant. Like he was bullying City's defence.
Yeah.
Like actually bullying Kolarov, mugging him off, knocking him off the ball, going round Di Michaelis.
He worked so hard as well.
Yeah, and a couple of things didn't come off. You know, there was that first time shot that he spooned over the bar, and it just looked like every kind of minor setback he had increased his determination to just. Yeah, keep working and run the game, basically.
To get two standing ovations from White Hart Lane in 2 weeks was fanciful. Even a month ago, to think that Lamela would get that.
Yeah.
He got one against Palace, and I think even then it was kind of, well done. Maybe you're not used to it, but against City, everyone to a man stood up and applauded, because he couldn't even run off.
Actually, something I want to ask you. You went to a game when we did a pod afterwards, and I can't remember which game or which pod, and you said that people around you were
Carabao
slagging off Lamela.
Yeah.
Carabao?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of them brilliantly fuck off back to Spain, Lamela, which is brilliant, because he's not Spanish and never played in Spain, so that was a well-rounded view, I thought.
But what was the reaction from people around you that you heard at the City game?
I doubt it was the same people, to be honest, but... I don't think anyone. There wasn't. The league crowd tends to be a bit more seasoned than the European and Cup games, because it's just the nature of it. People don't tend to go to the Cup games, but you hear a lot more because it's quieter at the Cup games.
Okay.
You hear a lot more. Yeah. You know, I don't even think Lamela had done anything. I think he just won a corner as well, and people were having a go at him.
He played well against Carabao.
He was
second half.
He did well.
And he scored a great goal as well.
You say in the way that he took our fourth goal on Saturday, I said 2 weeks ago he wouldn't have scored that. I reckon in the first half he wouldn't have scored that.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing where he, like you say, was running the show in the second half, and it just felt like a goal was just the one final thing that he needed, and he had that chance, and he took 6 or 7 touches around the keeper and around Demichelis. And it just never looked like he was going to pass up the opportunity to really crown a performance.
I think
it was great.
He looked like a £30 million player against City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think people's biggest gripe with Lamela is not that he's not good enough for Spurs, because arguably since the beginning of last season, he's been good enough for Spurs. Like, he's been getting in our team. He's been probably doing more than Townsend, which means he merits a starting place. But he's never once looked like a player who should have cost £30 million. And that's why people have been getting on his back. Like, if we'd have signed him straight from River Plate for £5 million as a 19-year-old,
yeah,
there would have been a lot more patience, I think. But suddenly against City, it was like, oh, this is why we paid that money. This is what you should have been doing.
Yeah.
And it's taken him a while, but if we get a £30 million player now for the rest of the season, then how good is that going to be?
Who cares? I think it's a fickle business as well. So it could have been the same people applauding him off on Saturday that were screaming at him to go back to Spain against Carabag. It could have been the same people. And it, you know, White Hart Lane is... It is a fickle place, you know. Bale was an idiot, or you know, too weak and stuff. And then 6-7 months later, he's in the team and
winning games on his own. I do get the impression, and it was quite noticeable. I don't know if you remember that picture of Bale doing weights with Real Madrid, and you saw that his arms—they were like ripped—and he looked like he'd been in the gym. It's not that noticeable with Lamella because he's quite slight anyway of build. But he looks so much stronger this season. Yeah. Like, beforehand, last season, for all the will in the world, I don't think he could have bullied Kovalev. Even if he wanted to, and even if he was playing that well.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't have had the physical...
He used to bounce off people.
Exactly, yeah. And now he pushes them aside, he goes past them.
Yeah.
And as well, I think the fact that he's living up to his price tag, finally, hopefully, was... probably rammed home by the fact that he was playing against two players who cost £45 million and £50 million, and they looked, apart from De Bruyne's goal, anonymous. Mm. They just weren't in the game. So
yeah, it was great.
And he was playing against two centre halves who should know him as well as anyone in the Premier League as well, and should be equipped to deal with him as well as anyone.
They
came
up, I thought.
But the way he just glided around Dimitrov, because when he broke forward for the Ericsson free kick, became goal. And I think Lamella was way back in the right back spot, helping out. And he sort of gave it to Ericsson, got it back, and then dribbled forward. And I thought, oh, I kind of was still thinking, oh, here we go. He's going to probably screw this up.
Yeah.
And then he just takes a touch, drops his shoulder, leaves Dimitrov for dead. And that was a second yellow.
Yeah.
He should have gone for that.
Yeah.
Not I care. Cause,
it didn't matter, but
he just looks so much better. It was so great.
Well, you mentioned the price tag. You know, he was part of that seven-man influx that we had a couple of seasons ago.
That's a really good segue.
Well,
that was a class segue.
Thank you very much. You have
ruined it.
You've ruined it completely. I'd rather the ice machine came and interrupted me. Never mind. But it was, you know, he was part of that seven, which is widely disparaged, but.
Mm.
He's now one of let's say that he still has a lot of work to do, but the signs are good. But let's say that he's definitely in our first 11 at the moment.
Yeah,
our strongest 11 at the moment. Yeah. Things are going to change, and you know, 2 weeks ago he wasn't. He was sort of
first reserve.
But he's now one of three, along with Chadley and Eriksen, that came in that summer that were, you can call, relatively successful, let's say.
Yeah.
The other four have obviously gone unceremoniously, but Baldini's gone as well this week. Was it yesterday that he...
Monday, yeah.
We announced it. I don't think there was many wet eyes in the house, was there, but...
Oh, no. And it wasn't unsurprising. It's been widely anticipated.
It's been in the post, hasn't it?
It's been widely anticipated for the best part of a year, I'd have thought.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing, we all know about the Magnificent Seven, but the thing that I still don't know, Magnificent yet, the thing I'm still not sure about is how much say Baldini had in summer 2014 with the Davis and Vorm and the Yedlin, Stambouli, Fazio, was that it?
Yeah.
Because it was very hard to say whether they were Levy signings or Pop signings, or
I got the
Baldini
impression
signings.
That both Davis and Vorm were kind of like Fraser Campbell Mark II in Daniel Levy selling Sigurdsson. and it was kind of like, you can only have Sigurdsson if we can have two of your players. Let me just pick randomly out of a bag. Okay, we'll have Vorm and Davis. As impressive as Davis has been.
In the squad, didn't it?
Yeah.
Why did we sign Vorm? I just don't understand that. Anyway, that's another question.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was going to say, we presumably knew Freeland was going to retire and...
Has he gone on to anything? Has he moved on to something? Or have we just got rid of
somewhere?
They said he's going to spend time out of club football, which makes me think he's got, maybe him and Capello are going to team up and get another highly paid international job. If I had to put money on it, I'd say that.
But what's Capello doing nowadays?
He's not free agent.
He's not a rusher anymore.
Is he? Russia.
Yeah.
He's free, so I'm.
Well, free. That's the fast and loose with that
word.
I'm sure he'll end up in Qatar or something.
Yeah.
I think with Baldini, I think we had a piece on Goal from Greg Stobart a few months ago now.
Gospel.
Baldini's role this summer was selling players.
Yeah.
Like, he just
heard that.
And to be fair, he did that pretty well. I mean, bar Adebayor, obviously, who... you know, was waiting for a sign from God or something to join Aston Villa. Everyone else who was Deadwood went.
Yeah.
So I think maybe he redeemed himself a little. Obviously,
a lot of worry, bloody bull, though. That's the problem.
But that's true.
But he's got
you couldn't have expected us to.
I was expecting more than one of them to still be at Spurs in the transfer window show.
Yeah.
In the end, it was just Adebayor, and as Harry says, I don't think there's anything more Tottenham could have possibly done to get rid of him.
Yeah.
It was all about him not wanting to go.
Yeah.
But Paulinho, Capu, Soldado, I thought
Holtby.
At least one of them would just end up hanging
Holtby
around.
Wasn't it?
So Baldini did a good job in that respect, but I still think his legacy, he'll always be remembered for those guys and misspending that money, but I still feel like his legacy could be positive overall.
I agree.
He was apparently the one who recommended Pochettino to Levy. Lamella could yet be, as we've just said, a £30 million player and a great signing. Eriksen looks a good bit of business. Chadli looks great value for money.
Yeah.
My overriding feeling with Baldini was always that he signed good players but not Premier League players.
Yeah.
I think he arrived from Roma with a list of 15 players he wanted to sign, and they were all perfectly suited to the Serie A, and he just didn't bother to change it.
Yeah.
He said, here's 15 players, they're available, we can get them, here's what you need to pay, and didn't think maybe they're not going to be able to cut it in the Premier League.
Sure. I'd be amazed to see how that £100 million was spent if Baldini had come in and Paul Mitchell had been there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have been remarkably different.
Mm.
And I think, I do think that Baldini was the victim of a very muddled transfer strategy that summer. It did very much seem to me that Levy was throwing mud at the wall and hoping it stuck.
Yeah.
To be honest, Bale was going. We needed to bring in a shed load of players. We knew that, but it never works. And it was never going to work, even if we'd have bought, you know, three players from Arsenal, three players from Chelsea and a player from Manchester United, it probably wouldn't have worked then.
I think it's Wenger himself said something like, I think Wenger and Fergie have both said in the past, if you've got major tweaks to be done with your squad, only ever do two at a time.
Yeah.
Two out, two in. Something like that. Because you just don't want to unsettle it.
I agree with Harry, but Spurs are always in a difficult position when... Well, they were in a difficult position with selling Bale because we knew we had a windfall coming in. But I can't remember who said this. I think I read it online somewhere. With Spurs, it's like you sell a Porsche and then you get ushered into the Audi garage. It's like we couldn't spend that Bale money on two world-class players.
Mm.
You know, we couldn't say here's 50 million Suarez come to us or here's 50 million. So, you know, it just wasn't going to happen. Wages, Champions League football. So we had Baldini's task was spending that money, improving the squad, and it was always going to be five or six players between the sort of £8 to £13 million mark. So it's a difficult position, but you know, again with hindsight, it's like why it would have been great if Bournemouth should have been there, because we might have said, we're not going to panic, we're going to buy a couple of young players.
But look at what Southampton did, because they're at the same position. They lost Shaw, Lambert,
Lallana,
Lovren went, didn't he? And there was one more, I think.
Chambers. Yeah.
That's like a core of a side.
Yeah.
And they improved on their league finish the next year, which is remarkable, really, to be able to do that. And they did the same thing. They didn't buy from the Premier League. So I just think it was rushed that summer, and I don't think all of the blame can be laid at Baldini's feet, to be honest.
Before we move on to Monaco and Swansea, we'll do a very quick preview because we're a rubbish at them and we're running out of time a little bit. Somebody made a point the other day which kind of tied into the Southampton thing that we were just talking about as well. Somebody said, has any manager done more for the England team, apart from maybe Ferguson, than what Pochettino's done in the last couple of years?
Well, that's a big question.
The development of Shaw, the development of Klein, development of Kane, Dyer, Ali is a decent shout for the Euros at the end of this season.
Let's really hope he doesn't get picked though.
Definitely. Like I don't. Yeah. I would rather he didn't. Well, I'm not. I don't know. As a wild card, but you can see it in going out there and getting a cruciate. But yeah, it was just a point that somebody raised, which I thought was a really. It was interesting to think about it because it's. It shows you how much faith he does put into, to promising youngsters. So, Thursday we've got Monaco. Are we away? We are away, aren't we?
We're away, yeah.
Stuff. Do we know anything about Monaco apart from Gian Moutinho?
The squad that beat Arsenal in last season's Champions League has been completely decimated. Yeah. So Martial is obviously the one everyone knows
Ferreira,
about.
Carrasco went as well, didn't he, to Atletico.
Abdenor, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah, he went to
Didn't he go to Valencia?
He replaced
Spanish slum.
Kondogbia went to AC Milan.
They lost
Berbatov, obviously
there. Kuzawa as well. He went to PSG, I think.
So I hazard a guess that six or maybe even seven of the team that played against Arsenal has been sold.
Yeah,
certainly not so what they used to be, are they, Monaco?
No, and there's something like 12th in League One at the moment. I think they're still a decent team, and they've still got players that can hurt us. But I think we're the favourites for that game.
It's arguably a Champions League type game, isn't it? It's a sort of level that we could be facing in a qualifier or. They'd be third or fourth seeds in a group that if we were to go into Champions League in the next couple of years. Yeah. I think it's great experience for a young team like us to go to places like Monaco where it is going to be tough, and whether they are or aren't as good as what they once were, it's still a big test, I think. So it'd be interesting.
I think as well, I was quite pleased when they came out in the draw. Reasons are twofold. I always want the toughest draw because I think it guards against complacency early on.
Also means the White Hart Lane is full.
Exactly.
Or fuller.
Which is a big
thing to get that happening again. And that's why...
You could hear a pin drop in Carabao scored.
Yeah. That's why 1882 are all great. They're not going to be able to do it in Monaco or Anderlecht, apparently.
Monaco will be empty, pretty much.
What, a home or away?
Home.
You mean?
When Monaco are at home. So when we're away,
they've only got 12,000 capacity or something like that. They don't fit it. There's one part of it is not a stand, is it? It's not a big
and I think
structure of some sort.
I'm quite pleased because it's a short trip as well.
Yeah.
So we can conceivably play players who, if we were going to play, I don't know, Rubin Kazan in Russia, we would rest and we would probably leave at home.
Yeah.
We can play those players. No part of me expects it to be a first string, to be honest. I think NG will probably start. I think we'll see Vimmer again. I think it'll be Vorm in goal. Trippier probably will play. It wouldn't surprise me if...
Rose or Davis?
Out there probably Rose. Because
it's
of
funny
Dave
one, isn't it?
What about for overall? Because Davis has made a lot of people eat some words, probably including myself. I'm sure I've said. We've said it actually. We've said Davies is going to be a Newcastle player.
You said it. I've always stuck by it.
All right. Let me just dig out the old DM from. No, I didn't rate him. I didn't see what he really did, I used to find it quite annoying to watch. But he's another one who's just played himself into form, hasn't he? So. I think it'll be Rose on Thursday.
I can't remember us being
that means probably
that deep.
It'll be Davis on
Sunday. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm actually fine with it. I still prefer Rose, but there's a couple of people, including Raj from Rule the Roost, who've written about how Davis has been a big part of our newfound defensive solidarity.
Yeah.
He's helped Vertonghen. Who's the left side of centre half? So I thought initially Davis was there because Rose kept getting knocks, which he does seem to keep getting.
Yeah, it's a bit like Walker in that respect, actually.
Yeah,
it's because he's a wrecker.
He's a bulldozer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leaves his feet into places where it's going to get.
I do prefer. I tweeted about it during the Arsenal game that it was one of Rose's best performances for us. I thought he was brilliant.
Oh, he completely
against
ruined the Bushi.
Arsenal,
yeah, he was good.
Against Karabag, he was diabolically
bad.
Yeah,
he was.
And I will always prefer Davis because
really,
when the ball comes towards Rose, I panic.
What, even after last season?
No.
I don't think he'll be at Tottenham in 3 years. 2 years.
I don't think anyone's going to be at Tottenham in 3 years. There's not a single player in there.
Because I think Rose was probably definitely Spurs' best defender, and arguably second to Kane as our player of the season last season. I really think that.
No, I disagree.
I wouldn't put him second, but I think he was in the top 3.
I mean,
five,
for
right?
me,
I think in the top 23 of the squad.
But really, not rating that much.
I thought every time we played badly last year.
I'm thinking
West Brom. I'm thinking.
No, not at all.
Every time
honestly,
we had bad games, the only people that stood out were always Rose.
Maybe that says something on its own. I don't know, but
I think I'm gonna get a lot of stick with this, and I should probably retract what I said on the previous pod that I was on that Vertonghen is a liability, because clearly now he isn't. So cheers,
we were all wrong on that.
Cheers for listening, Jan. Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. But as for Danny Rose, I just don't think he's very good as a defender. I don't think he's got much defensive awareness. He leaves his centre back exposed continually throughout games. Against Karabag, you know, come on.
He was rusty. It was his first start.
Whenever Karabag attacked down that side, and I know you were there, Tom, so I don't know if you agree, but whenever they attacked down that side, they were dangerous. And that was the only time they were dangerous. Obviously,
who was in front of them though against Karabag?
It would have been
Townsend. No, you were playing.
Son, yeah, it was. Oh no, Townsend was on the
Townsend
other
was
side.
On the right.
It was Lamella. No, Son was up front, so it would have been Lamella.
Oh,
or
Ali kind of drifted as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he was playing
in
front.
I'm wondering if he had enough protection. If that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, but I just don't think. I don't know if we were to play Chelsea tomorrow, Davis would start every day of the week for me. I would trust him.
Certainly
far
think he's
more
played himself into
up against
the
player like William.
So where do you see Rose in 3 years then?
You mentioned them, but probably somewhere like Newcastle.
Okay.
I think he's Premier League, of course he is. I'm not saying, you know,
yeah,
he's gonna go to Leicester.
Yeah, yeah.
Leicester, MK Dons or something. But I think he's erratic. That's the word I would use.
I think
Rose.
That's a fair assessment, but I certainly still thought that he was.
I'm going to agree to disagree. I thought last year he was consistently not erratic, actually.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that there's a.
Well,
bit,
this leads quite nicely into one of the questions, because one of the questions that we had, who was it?
It's a good preview, lads.
Oh, we don't know. Swansea are a good side.
Oh, wait,
Davis against his old club.
Oh wait,
well,
we did.
So
I thought we were doing one.
We're doing both.
Oh,
we always do both because the thing is these games do go hand in hand because you just said, if Rose plays on Thursday, it means
Davis
is playing. Yeah. It's one of those positions where we do have two first team quality players.
It would definitely be good to have Mason and or Dembele.
Yeah.
And or who's the other one? Bentaleb.
Bentaleb's at least another month away, I think.
Another month.
He was 4 to 6 weeks, and it's only been a couple of weeks since he.
Get Pritchard in against Monaco as well.
Yeah, he's coming back, isn't he?
I think it's a bit. Dyer's just so important now. It's a big ask for him to play another 3-game week.
Yeah.
He's started every game so far. Nine on the bounce.
Yeah.
So I really want to see him wrestle against Monaco.
Yeah, and against Swansea, it would be good to have someone like him.
Put Carroll in there and.
You need a destroyer against Swansea because they pass the ball really
well.
We need that against Swansea.
I actually didn't put the question in, but somebody said we don't seem to be overlapping as much this season with the fullbacks. Do we think that this has contributed to the more defensive stability? And I'm sorry for not putting it in the original lineup, but it's just come up organically. But I haven't got their at name there, so apologies for that. But I mean, Davies naturally doesn't overlap as much. Walker is supposedly more that sort of player, but he hasn't been doing it. Now, I've noticed that actually against City. He doesn't overlap as much. He did for the first goal and got himself 2 yards offside, but, you know. Do you think that's contributed, or do you think it's purely down to Dyer? Do we think it's a good partnership between Tony and...
I think it's contributed, yeah, definitely. I think... Tottenham don't tend to score many goals from crosses. I think I'd be interested to see the stats on that, because when Trippier was signed and when he played, I think it was against the MLS All-Stars, he put in some really lovely crosses into the box, and Kane played up front and he probably wasn't fit because he wasn't running onto them at all. And I just wonder if they've kind of said, let the wingers do their thing, and if they need help, let them tell you. And it's player led, because I suppose, you know, if you've got Walker constantly running down your side, the side of Lamella's instinct would probably be to pass to him, and if it's not leading to anything, there's no point in having that phase of play. You'd rather have Lamella play inside, look for Eriksen, someone like that, and maybe he can pick the lock instead of looking for the cross. I don't know. It's an odd one. I think it's not something I've noticed.
I think the three are definitely interchanging a lot better than we did last season, with what it would have been Eriksen, Chadli and one of Townsend or Lamella, I suppose, wouldn't it? It feels like there's a lot more coherence there.
Definitely.
I think in some, Eriksen and Lamella, I think. Should we move on to questions?
Yeah.
Anything more to add on Swansea or Monaco?
Swansea lost 2 on the bounce.
Yep, Southampton and somebody else, Everton or something.
Yeah, so I never know whether that means it's a good time to play or bad time, but I want two wins, please.
Yeah, same as before. It'd be nice to get, three Premier League wins on the bounce?
4 on the bounce. If we beat Swansea.
Who? Sunderland.
Sunderland Palace.
Oh, Palace,
City.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, potentially Swansea.
It would be incredible, but yeah. All right, we'll move on to the list of the questions. I might as well just hand them out. First one, not so skinny Pete at Pete Weston. Was the post Arsenal meltdown over the top, or was it justified?
Sort of done this, haven't we?
Yeah, we've kind of covered it. Do you think it was too much? Do you think people were? Because I saw people calling for Potch's head.
That's ridiculous.
What?
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous.
I did. I got into the same argument about it, and the exact quote was, "I hope he's turned up and handing his passing at the gates this morning." So a really grown-up reaction.
So that's OTT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit. Justified in that we probably shouldn't have played Fazio. There we go. Nice bit of
balance. But we beat City 4-1, so yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Dan Murphy, at D_Murphy84. Do you see Dyer one day returning to centre-back? This was a big topic that we've covered quite a lot because, you know, it's gone from we think it's a message to Levy to actually he's a pretty good plug. And now we seem to be getting to the point where he's one of our best players in a very alien, well, what we all things considered, it's quite
position.
An alien position to him. Do we think he's going to move back to centre back, or is this it? If he has a season here and plays this well, I don't see us buying. I don't see us buying a central defensive midfielder in January or in the summer.
I think on that point, I think we could definitely use someone as backup.
Maybe not.
In terms of Dyer, when he joined, I remember doing a profile on him for Goal, and he was trained as a defensive midfielder because he went on loan to Everton.
That's right.
When he was at Sporting, he didn't play, but I heard he trained as a defensive midfielder with Everton.
Hmm.
So he's done it from quite a young age. I think he's probably found his position.
Really?
To be honest, I think he's really quite effective there. I did say on the last pod that he's not playing there because he's brilliant at it, but clearly he is. He'll probably go back to centre-back eventually, like when his legs go and he's 30 or 31
yeah,
and he wants to
yeah.
extend his career, but why would he? He's playing really well.
Yeah, so
I'm not sure. I think you hit on something there, Tom, when you just said, I can't see us buying another one. I think if it was at another club, apart from Tottenham, if he was a Chelsea player and Matic was ruled out for 6 months and he was filling in for Matic and he was fantastic, and then January came along and Matic had a setback, this weird scenario is going places, and then maybe Chelsea would say, right, we're gonna sign a specialised defensive midfielder, you don't have to worry about this anymore, you've done a great job. But it being Spurs and it being Levy and it there being a new stadium, why would they spend money on buying someone else when he's doing this well?
Seems to be the very point of why Dyer's there in the first place.
It seems to be that Pochettino said no problem, he can do the job and he's exceeding expectations. But yeah, I just don't see Spurs doing something, spending money they don't need to spend on a player they don't necessarily need to buy, when we've got someone doing such a good job. So I almost feel like it's sort of academic, like he's probably going to stay there and he's doing a great job and I've got no complaints.
That's a good answer, because it's answered a couple of questions actually. So Chance at Juan Alfonso, should we sign anyone in January, and if so, what position, if not, why not? Clearly the two positions are always going to be striker and central defensive.
I still think we
still need a striker. We do need a striker.
Yeah.
I think we might be fleeced a little bit, but so it's Spurs for life at LouJane882. Do we want the media to keep disrespecting us as it inspires Eric and the others to step up? I think that's in reference to the interview that we were talking about earlier in the pod. I think we've probably answered that quite nicely already. Rich Arrowsmith at Rich Arrowsmith. How effective will Ndiaye be when resting Kane or coming on or slash coming on with 15-20 minutes to go? What I noticed about Ndiaye, so before anyone else goes in, what I found interesting about Ndiaye is that Kane obviously runs himself into the ground every single game. And when Ndiaye came on, Kane, you hardly noticed him. And I think it's a preservation thing. I don't think he wants to take him off for Harry Kane, because Kane is still our main goal threat. But Ndiaye did all of his running. The pressing of the keeper and the centre-backs was all Ndiaye when he came on. And Kane dropped into that number 10 that he played a couple of times last season behind Soldado. Don't know if you guys noticed that as well.
No,
or if that's
a great point.
I mean,
it is now
a good
you've
point.
Said it, I can see
the one that's closing down. Do we think he's going to be an effective player over the course of the season? But, you know, that and beyond.
Well, based on City, yes. Based on Arsenal, no.
No.
I think that this last week kind of, it probably sums him up quite nicely. He's raw and he's erratic and he's going to have some awful cameos, but he also might have some match-winning, game-changing cameos. Mm. He's obviously got a lot. He's obviously got talent. That turn, who was it he turned?
Otamendi was playing on the left side of it. I think it was
completely left him for dead, and then a great ball in, he didn't do first time pass into Lamella. I think he's going to be predominantly a sub and a cup player, and I think he'll probably win us a couple of matches in the league, and he'll probably have a couple of stinkers, and next season we'll see.
I don't think he's a striker. Having seen him against Carabag, when he got the ball on the left wing and he turned back, and I don't know what he was trying to do, but he split our defence with a 25-yard pass backwards to
Well, at least
Carabag's
we know he's
striker.
Got it in his locker.
It was incredible, and I did laugh out loud in the press box. I was like, what were you actually trying to do? But he's, like you say, he's clearly very raw. If we buy a striker in January, it worries me that he'll be sent on loan.
Really?
Because I can see that. Mm. I think he's He's young, he's raw, he's...
It's a lot of money to spend on a player for sending him out on loan, though, isn't
it? It is, but I don't know. It depends who comes in, really, on that point. But yeah, as Dan says, I think the points are good. He'll win us a couple of games. He'll probably get marked out of a couple of games. I don't expect to see him starting very much in the Premier League.
Fair enough. Last question then. Tim Gallery, I haven't got his at in there, sorry. As it's the 10th episode, who's been your favourite ever Spurs number 10? There is only one answer to this.
Are we talking actual number 10? Or
yes,
player who
not playing
at,
in the position.
The position.
Yeah, actual
I'm not very
number
good, but
10.
I'm not very good with numbers. Well, who's yours?
Sheringham. The only number 10. Did Klinsmann ever play 10? Or was he only ever 18?
He was 10, wasn't he?
Am I feeling he was only ever 18? 18 and...
Because I'm not very good with numbers either.
Well, he only had two seasons, so...
He came back on loan, didn't he?
Yeah,
he scored four against Wimbledon. He wasn't number 10.
He still only had two seasons in total.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah.
I don't know what number he was when he came back.
Oh, Sheringham still would have been there. It was huge.
Yeah.
I know Ferdinand was number 10 at the time.
Oh.
Ferdinand number 10 and 9.
Sir Les.
It's two mentions he's got on the podcast the last week, isn't it? Go on, Les.
He'll be well chuffed.
I hate Les.
I liked him as a player. He's sort of tarnished as...
Dickhead.
He's a prick.
Yeah.
I can't endorse that, I did an interview with
him. Oh, sorry, Aaron. Yeah, no, yeah.
What's he like?
He's nice. Yeah. He was perfectly pleasant.
He's just said some stupid things.
Yeah. Yes, he has. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a nice enough fella, but...
putting £15 million price tag on Charlie Austin was a bit stupid, but there you go.
Telling Dembele he'd be the next first player around Madrid.
Yeah, taking bets on which player would be, in inverted commas, injured... Europa League games when Sherwood was there.
Is that right?
I used to take bets on when Paulinho would go down in training. Paulinho or Capu, but it's widely believed to be Paulinho.
Doesn't that reflect?
Oh yeah, it reflects badly, but also get him fucking playing. Like, get him. Yeah. It's your job. You're a coach. Yeah. Get him up. And doesn't believe in central defensive midfielders.
Yeah, well that was the most annoying comment.
Mm.
Just so blatantly wrong as well, isn't it? It's just so misguided.
So blatantly wrong, yes.
Scary.
He's in a
position
of power
in sport
in
as well.
In youth, you know, youth development, and for all that people say about youth development in this country, when you think that Les Ferdinand has had a hand in developing some of our youngsters at two different clubs now, and it's frightening.
Well, that was the thing, I think I said it on last week's pod. He was working for... Basically, he was working for AVB. AVB was first team manager.
Yeah.
AVB believed in defensive midfielders. He always played one. If it wasn't Sandro, it was Scott Parker. If it wasn't Scott Parker, Berger, Dembele. And he had a bloke running the youth team who was telling our kids that it wasn't a real position.
Honestly. didn't he say Claude Makélélé was the worst thing to happen to the Premier League?
English football, yeah.
Worked out well for you, Les. I think that's it.
I can't ask the sharing.
I think there's
not that many.
Who's on the loan? Kane?
Harry
Kane, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm drawing an absolute
blank. Man U yet.
Van der Vaart wasn't 10, was he?
For two games, before he left.
Van der Vaart then.
Alright, that's a good shout.
If he was number 10 at any point, then he gets my vote.
Alright, that's fair enough.
Was he number 10 that season? He got the number 10, then we sold him to
He got it. Number 10, and he is... I had this discussion with someone on Twitter, and we discussed it, and then I found a picture of him coming on against West Brom. No, those first three games that AVB had. And yeah, he's got 10 on his short, so it wasn't very long, but because Bale took 11 that season.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, if you look back, we've had Kane Adebayor, before Adebayor would have been Van der Vaart.
Was Keane 10?
Robbie Keane.
Oh, Keane.
Robbie Keane. We've not...
Keane
of who we've
had a while, to be fair.
Yeah, he was 22, then he was 10. When we sold him and Berbatov, Fraser Campbell came in as number 9, didn't he?
Oh,
who was number 10? No, Pav came in as number 9.
Wasn't Berbatov 10?
No, Berbatov was 9. Who was number 10?
Oh, yeah,
he was. Well, this is a great chat. anyway, yeah, we'll wrap it up. Harry, thank you so much for coming down again and for bearing with us while we worked out how to get round the ice machine.
And the flautist.
And the flautist. It's incredibly warm in this kitchen as well, so that's the third that's the third one.
We've all gone delirious talking about numbers.
We have, yeah. Because
of heat exhaustion.
Yeah, this isn't even a podcast. We're just imagining this at the moment. One of us is asleep. Yeah, thanks for coming down, Harry.
Thanks for having me. It's a
pleasure. We'll welcome you on any time, I think. It's been good. Dan, anything coming up on the site?
No.
Dan, to be honest. Dan at the Tottenham Way. Harry, you are?
At Harry_Sherlock.
I am at TomFoynes87. Thank you very much for joining us this week. We'll see you next Monday, definitely next Monday. Come on, you Spurs.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Extreme cold weather advisory in effect this morning.
You're a contractor. You have a contract.
All right, guys, come on. Let's do this.
A little snow and ice isn't stopping you. Not today, not any day. Shouldn't your flashing tape be working through it all, too? Only Frog Tape Pro-Grade Flashing Tape's high-performance acrylic adhesive sticks, re-sticks, and stays stuck, even on the roughest surfaces in rain, snow, heat, and more. So you stay in control when it matters most. Show weather who's boss with Frog Tape Pro-Grade Flashing Tape.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.